Merħba għal program Minajnejn Barrani, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni oħra għamlu lill-Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. Another guest on Minajnejn Barranin is Stephen Oliver. I'm at the Manuel Theatre to meet Stephen, and Stephen is a theatre director. He's currently directing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And Stephen is British but lives in Malta. So let's speak to Stephen straight away. Stephen, introduce yourself. How long have you been in Malta? And tell us a little bit about the play that you're directing.
I've been here 2 years now. 2 years in September. I came over here, Tony Bazzina from Masquerade invited me to come and work for him. And I stayed, basically, I settled. I now work freelance, so I direct for all sorts of companies and act as well. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is a play I did in England about 4 or 5 years ago. And I don't tend to repeat things that I've done before, but when Tony asked me if I'd like to direct a play here at the Manuel, I suggested One Flew, and he jumped at the idea. And the issue is, as always, you know, I haven't repeated anything I've done in England in terms of it's a new cast, it's a new venue, it's a new set designer, and I've approached the play with an open mind again. So I haven't really kind of done anything that I've done before in this. And one of the interesting things about this play is that it predates the film. It's 10, 11 years older than the film was, and it's very different to the film. I mean, people who come and see this will see, obviously, there's the character that Jack Nicholson played, the R.P. McMurphy character, and the Native American Indian, and the wretched Nurse Ratchet, and so on. So they'll see the familiar faces from that, but the story is very much like the book, in which the story is told through the Native American Indian's eyes, the film is very much a vehicle for Jack Nicholson. And it was a fantastic movie. I mean, it's an Oscar-winning movie, and it's still an iconic movie of our time now. But interestingly, Ken Casey, who wrote the original book, has never seen the film because he didn't like the fact that Hollywood, in a sense, didn't focus on what the story was, which was the Native American Indian. And so what I did with this, I brought in a couple of characters from the book as well that don't exist in the play, because I wanted the extra atmospheric, so that, for example, when there's a group therapy meeting on, there is a patient who's ranting, and there is a patient who's talking to themselves, and there is a patient who's having a fit, just to kind of add to the atmosphere. Because when I saw this in London a few years ago with Christian Slater, I never really believed that I was in an institution, because the director had kind of done what the film did and concentrate on the two protagonist characters and not really kind of explore the characteristics of all the other characters. I mean, it's been great fun. It's poor Nurse Ratchet has no fun in this at all, because of course she's this steely cold character, but playing lunatics, I mean, I have been surrounded for the last 6 weeks by a bunch of mad people, and it's been lovely because they've gone where I wanted them to go and further. So they've all got their own idiosyncrasies, they've all got the things that are particular to their illness and those kinds of things, and it's been wonderful to watch that whole thing gel.
So the play is on this weekend at the Manuel Theatre, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And what's it like working with Maltese actors? Is this your first time?
No.
And what's it like?
No, not at all. My first play here in Malta was Feston at M Space, and I worked with the great Manuel Cauchy and people like that. And then I directed Butterflies of Three at the St. James Cavalier. So this will be my third play here in 2 years. I think the quality and standard of performance here is very high. I mean, the people I've worked, I've been very lucky to work with some. I mean, Alan Paris is in this, and he's an absolute joy to work with. But it's also been, and some of the other characters in this play, Victor De Bono, Renato Domecq, they're all fairly established actors here anyway, people that are kind of household names to a lot of people. But it's been a joy working with them. They take direction really, really well. I think they quite like, to a degree, the novelty of having a UK director. Perhaps that might bring something different sometimes. My background was a director in the UK. And
yes, yes, perhaps this is the best time to talk about this. Tell us all about your career in the UK.
Okay, well, I trained as a professional actor in London, and then I worked pretty much throughout the UK and Europe as an actor for many years. And then kind of sneaked into directing, really, in a weird way. I was asked to direct something by somebody else, an associate director, and so on. And I've directed kind of everything from musicals through to comedies, through to very straight, serious plays, both in the UK, in Europe, and in the United States. In fact, before I came here, I was directing cabaret in America. But I like the lifestyle. I don't really miss the hurly-burly of London anymore. I'm not getting any younger, and I'm quite laid back, and I quite like the obviously the climate's wonderful. I love the Maltese people.
Yes, so London was your hometown?
I'm actually originally from the Cotswolds in the West Country, and then I moved to London, and then I lived just in the suburbs of London, out in Kent. But I don't really miss that. I suppose I miss the quantity of theatre that is available. But both my daughters are grown up now, so they come and visit. This is a holiday resort for them regularly. So I don't really miss the cold October morning, scraping the ice off the inside and the outside of the car and those kinds of things. I really like the laid-back atmosphere. I'm probably more relaxed as a human being living here than I've ever been. So, and it's really nice. I've been very lucky in 2 years that people seem to want my services. And I mean, even this year I've directed, this will be my second play. I've done 3 films this year already.
3 films here in Malta.
I did I had a part in The Dove Keepers. I had a part in the Michael Bay film here. And I've just finished 20,000 Reasons, the Maltese UK production that Malcolm Garlier wrote. So I've been quite lucky. And then I'm in Panto this year here at the moment while I'm playing the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin Hood. So I've been very lucky, and people already seem to be asking for my services next year, so I'm incredibly flattered.
Do you think it's because you're a professional and British that perhaps you get sort of you've been embraced so quickly, or is it anything else?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think I don't really make a big song and dance. I'm not very good at self-selling myself to start with. I hopefully let the work just do it for me, really. And people go, I really respect the way he directed that, or I like how he's directing. I'd quite like him to come and direct for me, that kind of thing. Of course, I forgot to mention I was in Noises Off here as well for Masquerade. So I don't know. I suppose I've got, my CV is pretty long, I suppose. I've got, and for the first time, in fact, this production makes my directing credits exceed my acting credits. But when I do pantomime, that will address it back again. But I hope it's just that, I hope it's the people respect your work ultimately. You know, I did a lot of talent scouting when I first came here, because of course I arrived here, I didn't know anything about the theatre scene at all. I couldn't find anything that was on, and then people pointed me in the right direction and said, you'll find it here in London, because we have this thing called Time Out, which has all the films that are on, all the concerts that are on.
All listed in one place.
Absolutely. Yeah. But once I started going out there, in a sense, I wanted to embrace the theatre that was going on here. And secondly, it gave me an opportunity to see who was out there. So when I came to cast Cuckoo's Nest, which was back in April, actually, I cast it. Because there's 17 in the cast, I wanted to, in a sense, sign them all up and get them committed from a very early date, and I'm very lucky that I did. I mean, I got Alan very quickly, Joe DePasquale, who plays the Native American Indian, all of those were on board very, very quickly. But I'd seen them all, I'd worked with Alan in Noises Off, but I'd seen them in other things, so I kind of already thought, yes, I'd like him, yes, I'd like her. those kinds of things. It was the same with Manuel when I did Feston. I saw him in the play about Lockerbie at St. James, and I sat next to Tony Bazzuna, and I said, that's the guy I want to play the father. It was kind of, so it's been very useful for me in terms of that. I've also, interesting, yeah, I have been, although I don't speak any Maltese at all, I have seen a Maltese production as well. I saw Chris Gatt's production of the Hypochondriac that was done at the City Theatre, all in Maltese, but because I knew the play, I kind of understood what was going on anyway.
And what about the level? What did you think of?
Yes, good. I mean, there were some very established actors in that. The language is beautiful when spoken on stage.
Yes, that's one thing I wanted to ask you. Did you feel musicality to the language?
Absolutely, yes. Some of the characters in it delivered the dialogue in Maltese beautifully. It had a kind of natural poetic feel to it. So I kind of want to get out there and see a bit more, really.
And perhaps learn Maltese?
I'm going to attempt to, yeah. I know a few kind of essential words, but I hope ultimately somebody will ask me to direct a Maltese production, because I would love to. I'd be very same with opera. I'm very fascinated with directing opera, even though it may be in Italian. I think the language of theatre is kind of universal and doesn't really, it cuts across all language barriers anyway. But I've loved my time here in Malta, and I intend to stay. I have no intention of kind of emigrating back to the UK again.
Stephen, when Tony Bazzuna contacted you to come to Malta to teach, had you ever heard of Malta before? What was your
I had never been to Malta. My parents had come here for a holiday, and Tony rang me up and said, why don't you come over for a weekend?
How did Tony know about you?
We had a mutual friend who's now sadly passed on, Adrian Rendell, who in fact started the original drama school, the state drama school here.
In Tada, here, yeah, the Manor Theatre.
I think it was the Drama Centre or whatever.
Oh, the Drama Centre.
I think he started that, and I think Tony was one of his students, but he was also my teacher at Wembley Douglas, where I trained in England. So we did have a kind of common bond, and then I just thought, at one stage, I just thought, I wonder what it would be like to work somewhere else other than the UK, permanently or on a long-term basis. So I kind of did a bit of homework, and Malta, my partner at the time then, she'd just been to Malta, and she said, there's quite a lot of culture here, you know, and also they're, you know, obviously going to be European capital of culture in 2018, why don't you have a look at Malta? And so I did a bit of history on Malta and had a little look. And
up to that point, did you know anything at all about
Malta? Nothing at all, apart from the fact, I mean, I'd obviously had seen the famous film about Malta during the Second World War.
Oh, the Malta Story.
Yeah, I'd seen that, remember seeing it, and obviously I knew that Malta got a GC and all those kinds of things. But apart from that, I didn't know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that Malta weren't very good at football. No, I'm joking.
I mean, we're a small country, small level.
And
we try our best.
You do.
And we'll be playing England in a year's time.
Wow.
We're in the same group.
Absolutely.
And Scotland.
Yes, that'll be hell when they all come over here.
Well, we held the Italians to 1-0, so maybe, hopefully, but England are stronger at the moment.
Very good game against Croatia last night as well. So I came over just for the weekend, and when I got here, they showed me around, because they were still at their Floriana place then, and M Space was still being built. It was still a building stuff. I had a tour of that. And I did a workshop, which involved some of the staff and so on, which I really enjoyed. And then I kind of went back to England, and then I went off to America, and I kind of kept in touch with Tony. And then one day he rang me about 2 years later and said, look, I'm in a pub in London, do you want to come up and meet me? So I just drove up quickly to meet him, and he said, do you still want to come and work for me? And that, and I just went, yeah, go on then. And that was it. That's kind of how it happened, and then I moved here.
And your very first impression of Malta when you got off the plane, like, new place?
Interestingly, because the first impression of Malta was I was staying in a hotel in Sliema, so of course I saw all of it in front of me, Valletta. I mean, I never tire of the view of Valletta when you come out of the tunnel at Tinya Point. I never tire of that. It's one of my favourite views. But of course the second time when I moved here, I'd only literally got off the plane, and I had to come here for Masquerade's Trinity exam presentation. So they plonked me on the stage in front of all of these people.
At the Melbourne Theatre.
Yeah, and they're like, who's this guy? Who's this guy? And this is the new drama man, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my first day. And because I lived in a hotel for about 3 weeks here before I actually found somewhere to live. And so that was interesting. I lived in three different hotels because they were all booked up and I had to extend because I couldn't find anywhere to live. So then I had to move to another. So I had to move my whole life in six suitcases around parts of... So I got to see quite a bit of the early part of Malta straight away. But I love it. I love the architecture and I love the...
You straight away when you were...
Absolutely. I love... I had a townhouse in Sleeman. I had one of those lovely Maltese balconies with traditional tiled floors with the stained glass windows. And I absolutely love that kind of tradition. I now live in a very, very modern apartment. Those kind of impressions, the kind of view across the water, I just love all that. And at night, it's absolutely idyllic. You know, driving through Sleeman, you can see the lights of Valletta lit up. And I love all that. Even the Freeport down at Master Scala, is it?
Master Schlock.
When it's all lit up, it looks spectacular. I just love the fact that the sea is close by. I mean, my eldest daughter loves Camino, and I have to do all that. Perch on the side of a piece of sand with about 3 million other tourists. And Gozo I absolutely love. And I got to know Gozo, because as soon as I got the scooter, and the first thing I did was jumped on it, went over there, spent the whole day in Gozo touring around. Absolutely loved it. So those were my kind of early impressions, and how friendly everybody was. Everyone was pleased to meet me. You know, we've heard all about you. Welcome on board. Nobody couldn't have been any more friendly than they were.
The Maltese actors you're working with, they're part-timers. They work during the day and they rehearse in the evening. But surely there's a difference to the people you've worked with in other countries who are professional, who live and eat from theatre.
It would be easy to say it is. I mean, what I did was I kind of compared it between working with professional actors back, say, in the UK and working with some of the best amateurs in the UK, and I've been asked and paid to direct shows that were performed by them. And I think that the standard of performers here is above what I would call our very good amateur in England. The only difference between a professional actor and an actor, a Maltese actor here, is that one, obviously they get paid all the time. Secondly, they obviously work more hours and the rehearsal periods are much shorter. And they have to do it more often. I mean, I'm used to doing shows in the UK for 3 week runs or 5 week runs. This weekend thing is was strange to me when I first came here.
You mean no theatre during the week?
Yeah,
because we have weekend shows, maybe 2 weekends, 6 performances, perhaps 9, but not like 50 performances in a 6 week period.
No, absolutely not. And it's a lot of work, I always think, for maybe just 6 performances. What I can't fault is the commitment of the actors. Their commitment to this show, they're all sold on it, they all love it, they all love each other, they've got on really, really well. There's a lovely rapport in the cast. It's very much an ensemble piece, although it would appear to be a story about, obviously, McMurphy and the nurse. It is very much an ensemble piece, and they very much have that spirit about them, and there are no stars in the show at all. They've all treated each other exactly equally. There's been no tantrums. I don't have tantrums anyway. And everybody's been hugely supportive, and their commitment has been second to none. I think the standard is higher than perhaps some people give them credit for, because I think it is good. I would love to see a position here in Malta where ultimately, eventually, there is some kind of, as there is with the National Dance Company, it would be lovely one day to see a professional theatre company here, perhaps operating out of this beautiful theatre. I think it just needs someone to have the courage to do that, because it would work here. It just needs somebody to do it. The talent pool that's out there is huge. So I'm very optimistic.
What about the audiences, though? You've heard maybe sometimes you get high audiences for certain shows, but other shows don't get that many audiences that make it worthwhile.
Yeah, I think producers here are incredibly brave because, there are some, like you say, there are some shows that are guaranteed money spinners. I mean, with all due respect, things like Sex and those kinds of things, that always sells. You know, if you've got a light comedy that's got a girl walking around in skimpy underwear, that's always going to sell. And I'm not denigrating any of those, and I've directed those kinds of shows as well. There are some, like this play, which is obviously well known from the film, people will come to see because it's got that kind of... The hard part is trying to sell a show that perhaps no one has ever seen before. That's always more difficult, I think. So I think producers... certainly the producers that I know, they take a huge risk. They take a gamble. I mean, I count Tony and obviously Edward from FM and Adrian Buckle and those kinds of people. Sometimes they are prepared to take a risk. And then maybe go for something that they know will balance the books, if you like. I mean, we know pantomime here is always a good seller. It struck me when I first came here that the audience base is slightly different. There's a kind of core group that seem to go to theatre a lot. And then there's a group that go to the pantomimes and perhaps don't go to any other theatre at all. And that's fine. That kind of happens in England anyway. I mean, people take their children traditionally to pantomime in England, but they may not take them to any other show in the West End. So I think producers are very courageous here. I've never worried about the amount of bums on the seats, as we call it. I mean, if I can walk away from here and the quality of the performance is as good as I want it to be, and I'm proud of the actors that have worked for me, I can't really ask for any more. Obviously, the producer has to bear the brunt of the suits not sold and so on, but really, ultimately, it's about the quality of the work. And the standard, the quality of work, if it remains as high as I've seen it in Malta, there will be a wind of change eventually. People will kind of go, do you know what, that's a good company, they do some really good things, we should go and see them. I mean, a lot of it seems to work here on word of mouth. People are quite cagey about booking tickets, and they wait till their friend has been to see it on the Friday, and then they'll suddenly book a ticket because their friend will say it's wonderful or whatever it is. And I think one just has to be realistic about that. I'm not really worried about. Obviously, I'd love it to be sold out completely.
So, the Maltese actors that you've worked with, one of the things that sometimes is difficult to pin down is the actors' other commitments. Sometimes they're doing some television and they can't come to a particular rehearsal. While when you're working in professional theatre abroad, the actors just committed to that show and that's it, 2 weeks rehearsals. So how have you been able to balance everybody's commitments, and have you found it frustrating at all?
No, not really at all, because what I did right from the outset, I started rehearsing just at the end of August, knowing full well it was the end of the summer holiday anyway. So I just basically sent out a rehearsal schedule and said, now tell me which ones you can't do. And then I worked my rehearsal schedule around that. So, for example, I didn't have Alan for the first week of rehearsal. Alex Camilleri-Warne, who plays Nurse Ratchet's a doctor by profession. So sometimes her schedule slightly changes. Well,
and she works nights, I suppose.
Absolutely. So we just adapted around it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it all started to come together about sort of 3 weeks or so, when people then, obviously, they cleared their diaries to make sure they could do it. But I mean, I also had film commitments and I had other commitments as well. But by and large, it's not been frustrating. I don't get wound up by these kinds of things at all anyway, because I know ultimately I'll deliver the goods anyway, and I'll get them to deliver the goods for me. So there's been no tantrums, no frustration, no nothing.
What about working here in Malta now? It's a small market. You've worked in the States, you said. I don't know if you've done anything famous that maybe we might have heard of, and if you have, please do tell us, or something that maybe you've been involved in movies or something like that. But here in Malta, you're performing to the Maltese and maybe a few tourists and foreigners who live here, but that's it. It's quite a small market. Will you not miss the larger audiences, the longer runs that you will get abroad?
Yeah, I certainly do miss the longer runs. I mean, going back to what I was saying about America, I directed Cabaret, you know, the musical Cabaret in Virginia. It was a huge theatre, and it was full every night. Then the year before that, I directed Godspell at the National Theatre in Croatia, in Split. And I mean, a very similar theatre to this, and it was sold out before we even opened.
They had thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
For a week and a half. So yeah, I do miss the long runs, because I always feel for the actors. I think you've put all this hard work into this, and I mean, this is a hugely draining show, because I mean, they're mad for 2.5 hours almost. And it seems a lot of work for just 6 performances. I think audiences are audiences. I think the audiences in Malta are equally as intelligent as audiences elsewhere. And if they see a good night out, they will enjoy it.
So it's not so much the size of the audiences, it's more the appreciation.
It's the quality of audience. Absolutely. I mean, what's always interesting for me is, I mean, I taught for a little while at Masquerade, and I teach at Stagecoach now. I mean, what always touches me is when I direct a show and some of my older students come and see it, and I haven't plugged it at all. Because after all, they are the audiences of the future. I mean, it's slightly different here because in England, it's about disposable income. Quite a lot of people go to the West End, for example, to see shows. I mean, it's extremely expensive. You know, if you go as a family of four, there's not much change left from a lot of money. And so the audiences a lot in England are quite what I would call grey. They're the kind of 40 to 50 year old age group that have a lot of disposable income, whereas the young don't, you know, necessarily go unless it's somebody they know from television or that kind of thing, or it's a musical. Musicals are always well supported in the West End. But the audiences here are more diverse, because I mean, I remember when I was doing Noises Off, most of my first part of my stuff on Noises Off was from the auditorium, so I got a good chance to see the audience. And that, what was really heartening was they were of a whole different age group, from the young right through to the elderly. And that's very heartening. That's always, you know, so I think I think the audiences here are fabulous. So the ones I've certainly been to my shows have always shown their appreciation, have been really good. I've been made to feel welcome, and you know, people who don't even know me come up and say "Prosit," and you know, and that's kind of amazing.
The prices thing you mentioned is another interesting point. Sometimes people complain, "Oh, I won't go and see that show. It's so expensive. It's €20 or €25 for a show. My goodness." But perhaps you can compare the prices in, as you said, the West End.
Yes, I mean, if you went to, if, for example, if you wanted a decent stalls ticket for, or centre dress circle ticket for, say, Wicked in the West End on a Saturday night, you could be paying 60, 70, 80, up to £100 for a ticket. I mean, I saw,
per person.
Per person. I saw West Side Story on Broadway, and I paid $120 per seat. Yes. So proportionally, I think also people sometimes forget, these things are not cheap to mount. Mm. I mean, there are 17 members of the cast in this show. We have an Italian set designer. You know, there's obviously the
all in the interest of higher quality.
Absolutely. And then on top of all that, of course, obviously you've got this beautiful building and the staff that come with that and the hiring for this and the rights to be paid. It's very expensive to mount these things. And even if you're going to break even, you've got to try and match that with the ticket prices. I don't think €20 is a lot of money to see quality theatre.
Is there a piece of music that you love, that represents you and the United Kingdom, where you've come from, so we can play it during the program, which might be all about you?
It sounds quite maudlin, but I'm a kind of child of the 60s and so on. I'm actually Knights in White Satin by Moody Blues. It's probably my favourite track of all time.
So we'll hear Knights in White Satin, Stephen Oliver's favourite song. This song represents you and your move to Malta.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always miss with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you. Some try to tell me thoughts they cannot defend. Just what you want to be, you will be in the end. And I love you. Yes, I love you. never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I've always missed with these eyes before. Just what truth is, I can't say anymore. Cause I love you.
Tisamaw il-program Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li jxandar kulna ta' tlita fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. This program is called Minajnejn Barranin, Malta through foreign eyes. If you feel you can contribute to this program by being interviewed and offering your own insights, please write to us here at campusfm@um.edu.mt. That's email campusfm@um.edu.mt. I'm currently at the Manuel Theatre speaking to Stephen Oliver, a British theatre director who lives in Malta. Maltese theatres, the actual buildings and facilities, what are your experiences compared to abroad here in Malta?
Well, the nice thing you've got in a very small place, obviously the Manuel Theatre is an absolutely fantastic space. It's a beautiful theatre. It's got a fantastic atmosphere to it, and so on. I've worked at St. James Cavalier, which I love. I love the theatre in the round setup. That has its very different qualities. It's very good for a very intimate theatre where you want the audience very close by. I've directed at M Space in the Blue Box there. That's a very flexible space. The outside theatre here, the Palazzo one, is it? The one that's the old opera house.
City Theatre, yeah. Yes. No, excuse me, City Theatre is the one in Old Bakery Street. Piazza Teatro Real.
Yeah. I mean, that one, it has its positives, but of course it's subjective to weather and time of year and
wind.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about the acoustics either. It would have been nice. I believe Enzo Piano's original design for that was to have some kind of retractable roof or some roof on it, and I think that might have helped the acoustics. The City Theatre I've been to once, I think that's a former kind of trade union.
Yes, that's building. The one, yes.
And I've been to kind of the Silesian and I've been to some soirees here as well, in school halls and so on. I mean, I think per capita, per size, the amount of theatres you've got here is just about right. I mean, MITP is a lovely space. I've worked there, but of course now it's not available because it's kind of been engulfed into the university. It's not available for use anymore. So maybe there's more room for more black box spaces, as I call them, you know, kind of flexible spaces where you can move the seating around. But, I mean, certainly blue box is a hugely flexible space, because when I did Feston, it was set out in one way. And then when I saw a handbag recently there, the setup for the seating was completely different.
It was very versatile.
Yes, very versatile space. And when I did Butterflies of Free, we had it in the three quarters, so we didn't have it fully round. Those kind of spaces are really good. I love working here. This is only
at the Manuel Unit.
Yes, this is only my second experience of working here, once as an actor and now once as a director. And of course, I'll get that experience again in pantomime this year. So I love the space. I think it's wonderful.
What do you think of an opera house for Malta? Is there space? Is there audiences?
I'm sure there are audiences for opera, and I know opera here is quite well supported. I believe this currently and the place in Gozo are the spaces where opera often takes place. Yeah. I mean, this is perfectly situated for opera. I mean, if you went to La Scala, it's got these kinds of boxes around it, and I'm not sure there's a cry or a demand for a specific opera house.
I mean, there was a demand when the Lento Piano Theatre was being rebuilt the way it is, and a section of the population simply wanted the old theatre. Perhaps you've seen pictures of it, the old Royal Opera House, to be rebuilt the way it was. So there was a bit of a demand there, but the question is, would they have gone to it and would they have supported it if it had been built in that way? But anyway, please go on.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with building theatres are they're enormously expensive facilities, because it's not just the structure of the building, of course, it's the whole inside, the lighting, the stage, you want flying galleries, you know, that whole concept. You're not talking about a cheap thing. And I think the problem is, you know, you're quite right, you've got to balance it as to whether or not you're ever going to fill it. Otherwise, you end up with a huge white elephant that you can't fill. Even in Britain, there aren't new theatres being built anymore. What they are trying to do is restore some of the original old ones, or refurbish the existing ones. But I think I can't remember in the last 5 or 10 years an actual theatre, a new theatre actually opening. They're very costly to build.
The debate will go on and on and on, I assume. Stephen, something a little bit different now. Is there something about Malta in the 2 years you've been living here that you absolutely hate, dislike? You know, respectfully, but feel free to express your opinion.
The buses. I'm probably not the only person to say. I'm lucky now, because when I first moved here, I had no car or any other means of transport, so I was kind of reliant on them. And I lived in St. Julian's, which is, of course, on that major route to the north and the seaside. So often during the summer, the buses were uninhabitable or
full,
full and hot. And then I moved to Sleema, which didn't really improve the situation. But recently, on the money that I earned from the Michael Bay film, I bought a brand new scooter. And it's made a huge difference to me, because, of course, I can use the bus lane. So I, touch wood, never have to take another visit on one of those buses again. That was the thing that really, I think, used to annoy me the most. It always appeared to me like the timetable might be a work of fiction. Certainly with the stops where they have the electronic indicators and they tell you the bus will be here in 3 minutes, that obviously aids the situation. The roads are interesting, especially for a scooter driver.
You mean the driving level?
The actual quality of the road surface can be very interesting.
Interesting is a mild word.
I decided to go down to Lapsi, which is one of my favourite places to swim.
Ah, Lapsi, yeah, yes, yes.
And I took the road between Lapsi and Zuria, the one that goes past the ancient monuments.
Ah, Hajaim.
Yeah. Yes. That actual road is an ancient monument as well. It has more holes in it than it has tarmac.
It's the truth. So we Maltese can't really get offended by a foreign person pointing that out.
But I think those are the only things. I mean, I love the Maltese people. I love the beer. I love the bread.
Let me just stop you before we talk about these lovely positive things. What about being on a scooter with Maltese driving, which again sometimes gets criticised?
Well, because I used to ride motorcycles a lot in England anyway, I always treat everybody on the road as if they're out to kill me, and then it usually works out okay. So if I see somebody just waiting to pull out onto a major road, I'm going to assume they're going to do that. So, fortunately, touch wood so far, I've been fairly safe. They are quite interesting sometimes. Some people don't like being overtaken. That's always interesting. But by and large, the driving's, I mean, there are bad drivers in all countries. I don't think it's the University of Malta. I don't really have any other negatives. Everybody's been really friendly to me. I've had no issues with not being Maltese. People have been massively friendly towards me.
Friends
have always been lovely to me. My Maltese neighbours are great. Couldn't do any more for me than they do, you know.
Any bureaucracy?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, yeah. I remember when I first came here trying to get my ID card, and I was told it only takes 3 weeks, and having had 3 visits to the immigration department, it took 6 weeks. And the only reason initially I got one was because when I first arrived, there were 2 bus fares. There was a bus fare for Maltese citizens, and there was a bus fare for non-Maltese. So to get the cheap bus fare, I thought, oh, I'll get an ID card. And by the time I got the ID card, they changed the fare structure back to the original one, so the benefit of that didn't seem to work. So the bureaucracy can be quite interesting. Getting anything in a hurry seems to be quite difficult. But by and large, people have said to me, if you go into a police station and ask for help, if you're not Maltese, they'll probably be less than helpful. But I had one occasion, which was very minor, where I had to go into a police station, couldn't have been any more helpful. I haven't had a negative side to bureaucracy at all. I haven't been frustrated by it yet, but I'm sure I will be.
What about bread, you said, and then the stuff you love, the things you absolutely love, aside from the theatre, which you've spoken about a lot?
I made it my business when I first came here that every Sunday I would go out somewhere and discover a part of Malta that I hadn't been to. So I did that religiously. Now, of course, with the bike, it's even easier. I love the Maltese bread, and I know Maltese people who leave Malta always say one of the things they miss is the bread. I love those. I love the chisk. Sorry to do a plug for them, but it's a great. I'm not a lager drinker, but I actually really like it. It does, because lager doesn't normally sit well with me. I'm not a rabbit eater, I must admit, and I don't like almonds. So a lot of your cakes don't go down too well because they've got marzipan. But then I do like the pastitsis, and I do. And I do like the fact that I can just walk down the road and go into a cafe and get a cup of coffee and sit by the sea. I love that.
What about prices, cost of living?
I think the cost of living is, the one thing I thought was going to be cheap but isn't is fish. Fish is, I thought, you know, you're an island, you're surrounded by water, it's going to be cheap, because I think, like most places, it's been overfished now and it's very difficult, because I do love fish. But the cost of living is fairly comparable, in terms of how much we get paid here. I took an enormous drop in salary to come from England to live here, but then it wasn't ever really about the money. But comparably, rental and if you buy local, it's always cheaper anyway. The things I love here is the fact that I have a bread man comes every day, and there's the guy who sells the dip made out of beans. I forgot what it's called.
Oh, the Begilla.
Yeah. Yes.
Where do you live now?
I live in Zaytun now.
Oh, right in the heart of old Malta.
Yes, and I love it. It's very quiet, and it's 20 minutes for me on the scooter to Valletta. It's literally 20 minutes. And the fact that if I want 2 screws to screw into a wall, I can go to an ironmonger and buy 2 screws. I don't have to go to a garden centre and buy a packet of 40, which I'm never going to use.
Outside of town, yeah, like they have in England, like B&Q?
There aren't these huge outside of town places, you know, locals. I've got a Lidl near me, and it's kind of, and I've got a, you know, a Butcher's Choice and all those kinds of things. They're all perfect for me. The sea is 5 minutes away from me down in Marsiscala. So those kinds of things I really love. I kind of like that villagey, but I came from a village originally when I was a kid. I lived in the Cotswolds with my parents, and it was very much everybody knew everybody else. We all left our front doors open and unlocked.
Isn't the Cotswolds where David Cameron is from?
No, he's, I think he's Hertfordshire or somewhere like that. Gloucestershire, I'm talking about, Herefordshire, Worcestershire.
Oh, yeah, I believe he lives in that area, like Jeremy Clarkson, those. Yeah, isn't it near Oxford?
Yes, they probably bought it all up by now. But I'm used to, I think probably if you live on an island, you either like island life or you don't. I mean, it's a bit like Marmite, you either love it or you hate it. I love it. I like the fact that I'm surrounded by the sea. I like the fact that it's small. And I like the fact, actually, that people know who I am. I know that sounds really weird.
No, it doesn't, actually. It's one of the perks of living here when you're involved in the media.
Or theatre, that people say, I went to see the show directed by Stephen Oliver. Oh, yeah, I know Steve. I've heard of Stephen Oliver, and I may never have met them. Mm-hmm. I find that hugely flattering. I think it's really nice. I mean that quite modestly. I like that. You know, it's a terrible old cliche, but in a way, you are a bit more of a big fish in a very small sea. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. Whereas, obviously, if you're in the centre of London, you're a minnow in an enormous ocean to a degree.
What about a quick word to perhaps young Maltese or even older Maltese who are listening and who are thinking of going to the UK to study drama, theatre, and then are hoping to make it big?
I've had this conversation before with former students of mine who are now from Malta studying in drama schools in England. I think if you want to become a professional performer, then you need to go overseas to do it. You need to go to England. And go to a recognised drama school, as I would say. But I would also say, if you don't forge a career in England, for whatever reason, then bring those skills back to Malta, because the people that will benefit from that is enormous. I think, I'm very lucky because I teach a lot of young people performing arts, and some of them really do want to go into this industry and are hugely keen and are hugely committed. I think the only thing I would ever ask of a student is the same as I ask from a cast, is that, you know, the commitment to the project. If they're really, you know, I can't really be doing this. Somebody can only come to one rehearsal and they can't come for 3 weeks, and I can't really work like that. And they need to understand that's the kind of commitment that's going to be asked of them, A, at drama school, and B, ultimately in the profession. It sounds grotesque, but I usually go out of my way to try and dissuade them from coming into the industry. Not because I'm envious in any way, but it can be a particularly cruel industry, especially in the profession. I mean, I'm used to taking criticism. It doesn't really bother me. I don't read notices. I don't really take any notes. I know whether my work is good or not. And I don't mean that in an immodest way. It's like, I know, I'm never satisfied with my own work anyway. I'll see shows like this and go, oh, I should have done that, or I should have done this. But I am very committed to what I do. I'm very focused. I can be very selfless sometimes, but I can also be very absorbed sometimes. I'm not a very easy person to live with, because when I'm doing a show, I'm kind of shut in and focused on that.
But would I be correct in saying that, in fact, quoting you, it's a very tough profession, professionally working abroad. Let's say a Maltese person goes, studies 3 years, RADA, wherever, comes out, and perhaps gets jobs, works, but they have to work really hard for perhaps not much pay, and very few people actually make it to the top, fulfill their dreams and become stars.
I mean, it was quite interesting. I remember being asked by my principal at my drama school, what is it you want out of all this? And I said, I just want to work in this industry. I don't care whether I never become a star, but I would quite like to make sure I make a living from this. This is my job, and I just do it. And for me, that was my only goal, really. I never really kind of thought, oh, I want to be a big film star or anything like that. I would always say to students who want to go to drama school, make sure you're going for the right reason. I didn't go until I was 21, because I kind of needed to do, in fact, interestingly, I worked as a radio DJ before, and that's kind of where I started. I did lots of amateur theatre, and I was in the National Youth Theatre and so on. But actually, my main job was a DJ. I worked in nightclubs, and then I worked on BBC local radio. And but I needed to do all that to prove to myself I really needed to be an actor. And when I thought, no, I don't want to do this anymore, that's when I auditioned for drama school. And I would always say that to students. I sat on panels for some drama schools many years ago, and there were always a group of students who came because they'd seen X Factor. and they thought they could be an instant star, or they wanted to be a big Hollywood movie star, or they wanted to be in EastEnders, and those aren't the reasons for studying to become a professional actor. The reason to become a professional actor is because you want to do that as your career. It is actually just a job, after all. Some people, there's a kind of mystique about us actors and directors that we're some kind of elite group of pretty people that nobody else can gain access to. A good professional actor or a good professional director is as skilled as a craftsman is. I mean, there is a skill to it, and there is a set of skills that go with it. But it isn't some kind of mystique. It is, for me, it's just a job. It's just a job I happen to also enjoy and love doing. But I always said, if I stopped enjoying doing it, I would give it up and do something else. Which is kind of, for a while I was a bit like that, which is why I kind of diversified a little bit into teaching, which I love. I love working with young people. They keep, you know, I'm 59 years of age, but I'm still an 18-year-old trapped inside this old body. And that's kind of the thing that's kept me quite young, really, and quite kind of active and focused on theatre as it still is, rather than I'm not stuck in my ways. You know, I have done physical theatre pieces. I have done sort of stuff that has no words, those kinds of things. I've done that kind of material as well with the young. But ultimately, that's the reason to become a performer, not because you want to be a star. And if you go with that kind of attitude, and a realistic attitude that you're probably going to be out of work a lot of the time, then I think you do well.
Finally, Malta, is your future here from now on?
Yes, definitely. I don't see myself moving anywhere else now. I'm fairly settled here. I don't have any. I mean, as I say, my daughters come here regularly.
You've been to the States. You said Croatia. Why Malta, though?
Oh, well, those jobs just came about because somebody just rang me up and said, "Will you come to Croatia and work for us?" And similarly with the States. I love America. I'm particularly fond of New York. Could I live there? Probably not. I just find it too vast and kind of, I mean, the theatres are lovely there, and the audiences, again, are equally wonderful, and so are the actors to work with. But I think I've kind of come to a point in my life where I thought, do you know what, you just need to kind of calm down now and just settle down and do what you love doing best, get paid for it, but just kind of take it at a much easier pace. And I think that the my father died a few years ago, and he always worked right to the moment he died, and he was always like me. He was like running around, hyperactive, doing things. And I think that kind of made me sit back and think, do you know what, you ought to take it a bit easier. I mean, my health is fine. I have all my health with me. But I can't really see myself. Maybe I'm just lazy. Maybe I just want to sit back and take it easy. But I can't really see myself moving from here now. I love Malta. I love the island. I love the people. But the only thing I do miss, probably, are two things I miss. Scotch eggs, which I haven't been able to find. So if any of your listeners know where I can get Scotch eggs from, please let me know. And the second one is, obviously, I love when you fly home to England, all that greenery, you know, the grass and the fields and all that. But apart from that, I don't really miss that much, really. I can get most food things. I've even found a secret stash of Angel Delight tucked away in it, which is one of my favourite puddings. So I don't really miss it that much. And yes, I can see myself staying here. Very much so.
Stephen Oliver, thank you very much for being on Minainen Baranin.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Colin.
U dik kienet edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Minajnejn Barranin, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqgħu niddiskuti t-tajjeb u dak li hu inqas tajjeb f'pajjiżna, ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni jew oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu kif ukoll tistgħu issibuh fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.
Thank you.